I'm speaking today with Donna Skeel Seigen. She's a certified financial planner and a registered investment advisor. Donna is also president of Sage Future Financial, LLC, and just released her first book, The Joy of Financial Security, The Art and Science of Becoming Happier, Managing Your Money Wisely, and Creating a Secure Financial Future. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Donna.
Thank you, Zaylee. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, just this morning in the New Mexican, we read the nation's poor has hit 49.7 million. One in six Americans now face economic insecurity. I think it's a new high. So this topic is up, and I'm actually having two financial people on the show today to really talk about what is financial security, people who don't have money, what they can do to feel secure, people who do have money, what they can do to make a better impact. So you obviously are feeling this tide. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, 15 years ago, when I opened my first financial planning practice, I noticed that the clients I worked with who had a really healthy relationship with their money were happier overall. And I realized that that relationship with our money really does cover our lives in general. It really has a huge impact on our happiness. And then there were other clients I worked with where I saw that they were struggling with money and they didn't have a healthy relationship. Maybe they had bad, what I call money messages from when they grew up. And those tend to stay with us. They're embedded very deeply in the way we manage our money. And those folks really struggled with money and it impacted their happiness. And so I realized there was this really complex relationship between money and happiness, and it's not a simple relationship, and I wanted to unravel that. And so that led me to writing the book and lots of research in psychology and neuroscience and economics and finance, and it was fascinating. And so it led to a book 6 years later.
Well, and you do go through everything. You really start with some of the psychological aspects, and you do get into some really kind of gritty nuts and bolts near the end. So I think it can appeal to a lot of different people. Let's start at the beginning and how and make this association with happiness and money. You know, this notion that money can't buy you happiness, but it actually can. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, my conclusion after all the research is that it doesn't buy happiness. And the reason I feel that way is because I've known many people, and I think we've all known many people, who have a lot of money and are very unhappy. So the money does not necessarily lead to the happiness. It allows us to have more happiness if we manage it wisely. So my conclusion is it doesn't buy happiness, but it certainly impacts our happiness. And there are lots of strategies that can be used to improve our finances, and there are many that can be used to add to our happiness. And then there are some that I call compound benefits that actually impact both, which are really wonderful.
And can you talk about a compound benefit
sure,
here?
Sure. One in particular would be deciding that we're not going to keep up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. And that is a dynamic in our society that I think is so toxic to financial security. And it's kind of below the surface. I don't think we mean to fall into that trap, but it's just prevalent in our society. So if your neighbor gets a new car, you start thinking, my car's 6 years old, maybe I need a new car. And it leads you down a really dangerous path. And so I encourage the readers to commit. It's a very deliberate commitment to not try to keep up with the Joneses and to decide my car is perfectly fine. I can keep it 10 years. I can keep it 12 years. I don't need another big screen TV. I don't need new clothing. I'm fine. And then that leads to other things such as discussing that issue with your kids and your grandkids. And I encourage people to communicate with their families because money has been such a taboo subject in our society. And if you discuss it with your kids and you say, we are not going to fall into this trap of keeping up with the Joneses. We are saving for your college. We're saving for our retirement. We're saving for a rainy day. We're living within our means. That is such a powerful message, and you're being a role model to the kids and grandkids. And there are other examples. One would be things like focusing on gratitude. And there's been a huge amount of research in the field of psychology on how that impacts our whole being when we can focus on gratitude. So I encourage people to think about gratitude, what they're grateful for while they're brushing their teeth or while they're going for a walk. It's just so simple. Or the last thing they do before they go to bed. And that actually changes some of the structure in our brain. There's a huge amount of research being done on neuroscience that shows that the pathways within our brain can actually change from focusing on gratitude. And that also impacts our finances because it takes away emphasis on material items.
And I think alternately, there have been these studies recently that people who grow up for poor and in the state of kind of chronic stress, it actually impacts their brain functioning later on as adults.
Yes. I've seen that research, and it's amazing what the field of neuroscience is sharing with us now. But yes, those money messages, the money messages don't have to just be from being poor, but poverty has a huge impact on our society. But those money messages can be very negative, and they can lead to very negative, very poor financial decisions. And so in the book, The Joy of Financial Security, I go into some of the research on neuroscience on how you can actually train your brain to make better financial decisions. And there's a section, a questionnaire on what were those money messages you grew up with. And the benefit to that is that you become aware, because most people have no idea how their parents or their grandparents treated money or what they were taught at a very young age and how that impacts your decisions today. So I think by becoming aware, then you can start to change those patterns and make better decisions going forward.
And I think for a lot of women, I've heard from friends, there's a kind of fear, well, one, a fear of not having money, but also a fear of having money. And what do you do with it, and how do you deal with this responsibly, and maybe guilt?
I think that that's very true. And my experience is that many people are intimidated by money. And so it is that fear. And as a result, they're kind of in denial. And I encourage people to take control of their money. And there's several ways to do that. One way, there's actually three that I'll mention. One is to grab hold of a concept called control the controllables. And that's just simply saying there are many things that we cannot control, but other things we can. And so the things we cannot control would be things like what's going on in Washington, whether the stock market decides to plummet tomorrow or next month. We can't control that. What's happening in our economy? But the things we can control are things such as our savings, our spending, whether we're focusing a lot of attention on friends and family and on nurturing our creativity and on things that really lead to a very rich life, as opposed to giving money too much power. So I encourage people to get their arms around their money and take control and just decide you're going to control your money and it's not going to control you any longer. So that's step number one. In terms of how can you do that and what are some simple steps, I encourage people to actually fill out a net worth statement. And I'm amazed at how many people do not have a net worth statement. Maybe because their finances are scattered, and that's very common, or just because they've never taken the time. So in the book, The Joy of Financial Security, also on my website, which is just www.joyoffinancialsecurity.com, there is a net worth statement. And it's simply a matter of listing your assets, subtracting your debts, and the difference is your net worth. And the reason that's so important is because you're acknowledging it, you're taking control of it, you're owning it. And then I suggest that people update that every year, because then they're going to see tremendous progress in their finances. And so that's very exciting. The other thing, the other chart that's in there is a savings chart. So I think people need to know how much are they saving. And it may be a very low number, and that's fine. It may be zero, and that's fine. But then I would encourage everyone to try to kick it into gear. If it's zero, get it to 2%. If it's 5%, get it to 8%. And the goal is to actually get it to 15 to 20%, which I know is steep, but it is very doable. And so those are two ways. And then also to educate you on your finances. And I try to go through in the book lots of different strategies for learning about your finances, knowing why they're invested the way they are, if you have investment accounts, and determining whether they're appropriate for you. So those are two things. The third one that I would say is that all of those things I just mentioned in terms of savings and taking control are much easier if you're not in a crisis mode. So you opened the show talking about income insecurity and the whole issue of income inequality is an enormous economic issue on our society. And so if you're not in a financial crisis, I think you should be doing those things, figuring out your savings, increasing your savings, knowing your net worth, taking control, because it's much easier than when you are in a financial crisis, obviously. And the financial crises are often caused by things outside of our control, such as losing a job, or oftentimes it's a health problem that comes up. So you want to have that foundation before that crisis occurs, and then it'll be much easier to weather that storm.
And I've heard that the top reason for declaring bankruptcy is very often health crises, and very often these people have health insurance. I just want to throw that in there, that a huge percentage have that. So these are part of the uncontrollables, right, that this may happen, but having a safety net is not.
That's correct.
Now, you also distinguish between an emergency fund and regular savings, or are these the same thing? You speak a lot about making sure you have that emergency fund.
Well, they're not exactly the same thing. The emergency fund needs to be the first step, and I encourage people to have 6 months of expenses set aside just for those unexpected emergencies. The savings could be used to build that emergency fund initially, and then once you've got the emergency fund, the savings continues and goes into investments. So they're related, but the emergency fund needs to be there first, and that is truly your safety net. And then you start building the investment accounts. And having a regular savings routine will build those accounts pretty quickly. It's amazing, because then you get some compounding going on, and you suddenly start to feel financially secure, or you're on that path. And maybe I should mention, too, what in the heck is financial security?
Please do.
It's a concept that it probably seems rather elusive. And to me, I just use a very basic definition. It's having enough money to know that you can live the lifestyle you choose to live, you can achieve the goals you want to achieve, and you won't run out of money before you die. So especially when people retire, or when they're looking at whether they can afford to retire, knowing that they won't run out of money is such a huge concern. And so the definition of financial security is just knowing you have enough that you don't have to worry about that. And it's not a specific number. It's not like a $50,000 or $500,000 or $5 million. It varies for each individual. Some people can live a very simple lifestyle and be very happy, and they don't need much money. And others want to travel more or give more away to charity, and they would need more. But it's not a specific number. It's just having enough for your own lifestyle and your own goals.
And I think that's really important, because as I brought up earlier, this idea of how can we even have a retirement fund, or what do we look at? You know, as an independent journalist, and I know so many people here in Santa Fe, I mean, the idea of a 401k, or we don't know what that is. This is a foreign concept. So for people who are in this state or who work independently, really you go the savings route, right? I mean, and where should we put those funds? Is there anywhere that gives interest that of any significance here? I noticed you mentioned 6% and 7%, and I thought, where is she investing?
Well, the emergency fund, I think, can be at a bank, because it needs to be totally liquid and totally safe. And so it's fine that that's not earning much, if anything. But that's only the emergency fund. Once you have that 6 months set aside, I would encourage people to open an investment account. And it can be, well, my preference would be a discount brokerage firm, such as maybe a Schwab, a Vanguard, a TD Ameritrade, a T. Rowe Price. There's quite a few that would fall into that category. I do encourage people to try to keep their expenses very, very low, and discount brokerage firms allow that, whereas working with a traditional brokerage firm where you may have commissions, you need to watch those expenses and make sure they're not going towards the firm instead of going towards your investments.
That's good to know. And when you mention keep your expenses down, part of the happiness section, and I think we've spoken about it on this show before, is really to spend money on experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that some more?
Yes, I'd love to. It's an idea of recognizing that experiences are so rich. And so the psychology research, when they look at what are the factors that impact our happiness, usually at the very top of the list are friends and family. It's those relationships that we have that are very close. And so experiences with those friends and family should be very much at a higher priority than spending money or, as I said earlier, keeping up with the Joneses or anything that's materialistic. And focusing on those relationships, improving them. If you don't have a lot of friends, I talk in the book about how you can get yourself out there and make new friends. But really concentrating on that is key towards our happiness. It really has a big impact.
And you talk again, I say near the end of the book, you get into some of the details of investing for those who do want to also invest in projects, firms, as opposed to just family. And you have these 10 rules Can I go through them and then just ask you some questions about that? And
sure.
This is one, have a plan, which you've discussed, know why you're investing and what your goals are. Use discipline to follow the plan. There we go. Discipline's a good one. I should mark on mine. Have an emergency fund, safety net. Live below your means. So really, this probably also has to do with credit card debt. I mean, a lot of people have far too much debt, right?
Yes. I would say that the two biggest negatives in terms of people being able to afford or getting financial security are cars and credit cards. They're the two C's. So buying cars too often and having car loans, that kind of thing, and carrying credit card debt from month to month. I encourage people to pay off that credit card. And if they can't do that, then they need to attack it. Again, it's a very deliberate commitment to decide to get rid of that balance and not let it happen again.
Should we even do that before the emergency fund?
I think they can go hand in hand, actually. I mean, you can build your emergency fund and have 2 months and be tackling the credit card at the same time. So, yeah, there are ways to accomplish. A lot of these, they're very much interwoven.
Yes, absolutely. You say also know yourself. Honestly assess your tolerance for risk and select an appropriate asset allocation strategy. So really knowing what you can handle and if you would freak out. A lot of this has to do with loss, and you have this Warren Buffett quote here, don't lose money. Can you explain this?
Yeah.
And we had Peter Buffett on the radio earlier this week, so it's a good...
Oh, good. Oh, actually, I saw Peter Buffett speak, and he's fascinating. Yes, Warren Buffett says, rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. That's one of his famous quips. So he tends not to lose money because he doesn't invest in high-risk, overly aggressive sorts of things. And I do spend a lot of time in the book, The Joy of Financial Security, talking about what is an appropriate asset allocation. Now, asset allocation, it's kind of a big word, but it simply means how much do you have in the stock market and how much do you have in what I would call fixed income, which might be bonds or CDs or investments that are not exposed to the stock market swings and that are much more stable. And I have always encouraged my clients to be pretty conservative, but very balanced. And balanced is by definition a 50-50 portfolio. So only 50% of your money that's in an investment account would be exposed to the stock market. But it can go up as high as 60% or as low as 40%. Those all are considered balanced. But I heard just recently, one of my clients was telling me that she talked with her brother, and he said he's working with a broker, and he doesn't like bonds, and so therefore everything is in stocks. And this man is retired, and I said, oh my, you know, he's probably thrilled for the last few years because the stock market has been very kind to us. But if we go back into another situation like the 2008 crisis, the market dropped over 50%. And so for somebody to... lose 50% of their nest egg is just unconscionable in my mind and unnecessary. So I still run into a lot of people who have these aggressive portfolios. They feel like their investments must be aggressive. They have to catch the next big winner. And I totally disagree with all of that. So to me, having an investment account that may be 50% in the market, and that's usually mutual funds that are diversified with incredibly low fees, and then the other 50% in bond funds and that kind of thing, that generally will result in a nice return of 7-8% a year, and it does really well over the long term, and that's far better than being on a roller coaster and losing enormous amounts of money when we have a crisis and then having to dig out. And most people feel like that crisis in 2008, we'll have another one. It's not a matter of when. If we'll have one, it's a matter of when. And so you want to try to protect yourself from that next economic downturn. And in the book, I go into that in a great detail, how to do that.
And the next area is stay diversified, which is what you're talking about. Never put everything in one place, especially if you're retired and you don't really have necessarily that ability to recoup, right, if you have a massive loss.
Definitely, yeah. Staying diversified, it's not only just with stocks and bonds, but it's also not just being all in large cap stocks. It's having small caps and mid caps and international and a wide array of different investments, because in different economic times, they often behave differently. And so you do want to be diversified.
And then keep your investment costs low, you said, some of these, and pay attention to taxes. Oh, you also have don't neglect your finances. Let's do that before we go turn to taxes. Oh.
Don't neglect your finances. Well, that would just be taking control and recognizing that you want to have the power over your finances and you want to develop a healthy relationship with your finances, because that definitely then carries over into your entire life and the way you spend your money. It should be in sync with your values and your goals. Giving to charity is one of those things that actually leads to greater happiness, and the neuroscientists are looking at that, and they can see that different parts of our brain actually light up when we donate to charity, and that leads to more happiness. And so all of these things carry over between our finances and our happiness.
You know, you talk about a 15-20% savings, but a lot of people have like a 10% tithing. I mean, they have a specific amount every year that they want to give, regardless of their income. What would you recommend about that?
I would not discourage that. I mean, spirituality also is a key component of happiness. And spirituality is not necessarily just traditional religion. It can be, and it can be your faith and your beliefs, but it can also be a relationship with nature and that kind of thing. So it's much broader. But for folks that tithe or feel strongly about supporting a cause like that, generally that's going to impact their happiness in a very positive way. So I would encourage them to save and not move the tithing money over to the savings. They should continue that tithing if that's a big part of their life.
Have that be part of your budget. And that will also spread the happiness to the people who get to receive tithing. So
definitely.
We should remember that, the pay it forward.
Yeah.
I guess the last fact, don't ignore taxes. Let's just touch on that before we get back to happiness, shall we?
Okay. Yes. There's a section in the book that talks about three tax buckets, and it's a new concept for many people, but it does save money on taxes. So the idea of having three tax buckets is that your bucket number one is your IRA or your 401k, and that's often how people save for retirement, and that's tax deferred, and that's a great thing. Then the tax bucket number two is your taxable account. So that may be where your extra saving is going. It's just a regular account. It's not tax deferred or tax free, but it's there and it's a very important component. And bucket number three is the tax free bucket, which is the newest bucket, and that's usually Roth IRAs or Roth 401ks. And those are truly tax free going forward. So they are the most beneficial way to save for retirement if you can do that. And I think that the Roth IRA is the best investment tool we've had in the past 20 years. So the benefit to having three tax buckets is that when you get close to retirement, you have choices then on where you want to pull from. It may allow you, when you retire and your income goes down, you may have that opportunity then to convert part of an IRA into a Roth because you'll be in a nice low bracket. And having that middle tax bucket is important in order to pay the taxes. And so they all work together, and the book goes into much greater detail about that strategy.
Well, thank you. We've been speaking with Donna Skeel Sigun. She just released the book, The Joy of Financial Security, The Art and Science of Becoming Happier, Managing Your Money Wisely, and Creating a Secure Financial Future. And the website one more time, please?
It is www.joyoffinancialsecurity.com, and it is full of tools and information. It's all free of charge, obviously. I encourage people to go on there. Also, the book is available in Santa Fe at Collected Works and in Albuquerque at Bookworks and Page One and on Amazon, and it's across the country.
And a lot of this is about creating a secure financial state, regardless of what you have, and really having that help build your happiness. So thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
When we come back, I will continue to talk about money. We'll be speaking with Cliff Feigenbaum, founder of Green Money Journal.